Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
So today we've got Scott McFarland from Bosco's Boys podcast here to talk about Kansas State. Scott, correct me if I'm wrong. You have the best K-State podcast.
I've been told so. I think we're pretty highly ranked up in Apple rankings. Once upon a time, we had over, 100 five-star reviews, only five-star reviews. And then I said something that made some KU fans mad. And a lot of our friends from the University of Kansas, actually, they're probably not from the University of Kansas, probably folks who just cheer for their basketball team, decided to nuke me with one-star reviews. But highly rated, over 1,000 episodes. I'm just a fan doing this with his dog. Five episodes a week started in June. It'll go through the end of the year. So even if we're not the best one, I am the most consistent one doing it. And it's basically because I'm addicted to podcasts. Like it's not anything noble. It's not anything, that I have a couple of sponsors. It's nothing they ask for. It's just like, hey, I love talking about football. I work from home, so I can't bug my coworkers with that sort of stuff. And you know what? All my friends have wives and children, and I'm married to the podcasting game. So it's a lot of fun. I just enjoy doing it.
That is incredible, man. Five days a week is really next level. So congratulations on that. That is unbelievable. So Scott, man, before we get into Kansas State, tell us a little bit about yourself. When'd you graduate, major, frat? I don't know. If you went to West Point, you think everybody was a party animal and a frat boy. So I don't know the truth. You tell us the truth.
Not in a fraternity, nothing against anyone who was there. I went to Kansas State, third generation graduate from Kansas State University, graduated in May of 2014 with a degree in finance, minor in leadership studies, which, anyone at West Point probably laughs at anyone at K-State getting a minor in leadership studies. But
That's not how I feel about that.
It was fun to throw on a resume. Honestly, I don't know how much of it I ever really used, but it was a lot of fun classes. I enjoyed my time there. When I was there, K-State went to a bowl game all 4 years, went to the NCAA tournament all 4 years, and then my junior year, we won the Big 12 in football, basketball, and baseball. Big-time K-State fan. The season tickets I have at Bill Snyder Family Stadium, the same seats that my father got from his father, so third generation holding those seats, third generation holding the parking pass. My younger brother and his wife went to K-State, even though he's a KU fan. He got his master's from KU. My mom was the baby Jayhawk mascot, so I grew up in a house divided. So it's really the quintessential, Kansas kid growing up, because it really is. My high school is 6A high school, graduated with close to, was around 500 kids in my graduating class. Probably 200 went to K-State, 150 went to KU, and then a handful other. It truly was a life living that rivalry in Topeka, Kansas. So that's kind of what raised me, and didn't miss a single home football game from the time I was 15 and could drive, I put that in air quotes, up until 2020 with the COVID season. I didn't go any home games in 2020, but it's just ingrained in me. I love it. Big women's basketball fan and volleyball fan as well at K-State. So I truly bleed purple and, about all the senses of the word. Didn't probably go to class as much as I should, but, I went to all the sporting events.
That is awesome. That is really awesome. All right, so let's talk a little bit about last season before we sort of get into this season. How did K-State do last year? I mean, what did you think of this season? I was sort of looking at this today, and my initial reaction was, these guys look good, but they tailed off at the end of the season. Is that fair, or is that just kind of the way the schedule shook out?
100% fair. Again, for better or worse, Chris Klieman has a bad reputation of losing games that he shouldn't. And I say it's unfortunate because I think what coach doesn't have that, right? Like Nick Saban is like the only coach who his own fans don't grumble when they lose a game because he just never lost. But that Houston game on the road really was a tough one to swallow. Now, there was stuff going around Chris Kleiman and his personal life that, you know, his family got dealt a bad hand the week leading up to that game. And that's not to excuse anything, but, you know, after that one happened, you got put in a situation where after a bye week, you had Arizona State. And that was before Arizona State was even ranked. So K-State fans are like, all right, bye week, game at home. Let's get this back on track. You lose that one in pretty disappointing fashion. That kicks you out of the Big 12 championship race. And then you're going up against Iowa State. You know, they have a chance to, you know, have their best season ever. And you drop that one as well. And that they've kind of been a, you know, a bugaboo on our back the last handful of years. So it was a very disappointing season. The BYU game, that one just got away from you. But all four of those losses, you kind of look at and say, man, you know, it should not have gone that way. And I think K-State fans were disappointed, and Chris Kleiman even caught a little flack because after the Cincinnati game, he said, hey, winning eight games is tough. And he kind of had this statement. It's like, hey, in the Big 12 and Power 4 football, winning eight games is tough. And he's proud of getting to that mark. And, hey, let's go get number 9 versus KU. Where a lot of K-State fans were like, come on, man. Like, you're sounding kind of defeated. I don't think that was what he was trying to get across. I think he was trying to energize his team. But again, like since Chris Kleiman's been there, the worst season we've had is 8-5 outside of COVID. I ignored 2020. That was such a weird year. But outside of 2020, his worst season is an 8-1 season. And I think K-State fans are getting a little restless that they want another shot at the Big 12 title. They want another 10-win season. They want another, you know, top 15 finish in the AP poll. And everyone thought it was going to happen last year, and it just didn't quite get there.
He's not wrong. Winning eight games is hard to do. And at the point that you're like, man, we're only winning eight games, you know, things are actually going right. And you sort of have to take a step back. We've had that a little bit at Army too. You know, last year Army had such an amazing season. And you really had to like breathe it in and not freak out about the bad times because, dude, it was incredible. Anyway,
well, so what's weird is like even naturally, like Josh Pate on his show a couple weeks ago when talking about the Big 12, he goes, "Well, is K-State going to have another down year?" And again, he's saying another down year after you went 9-4 after a bowl game win. So it's not just even K-State fans. I think what Chris Kleiman has been able to do post Bill Snyder is something that I don't think K-State fans thought was possible. I don't think anyone nationally thought was possible to have this level of high level consistency after the guy who saved the football program left, because we all saw it happen the first time he left.
That's like I said, it's a good problem to have, but it's also, it drives you crazy as you're like trying to participate in the fan base with other fans. So anyway, 2025 is a new year. So what has you excited and what has you worried about your football team?
What has me excited is Avery Johnson. Again, when you want to talk about dual threat quarterbacks in college football, he was one of the premier guys. Again, I think he did not quite live up to the Heisman level expectations that, you know, K-State fans and even folks outside of K-State, you know, CBS had him, you know, as a Heisman dark horse. A lot of folks were talking about him like, hey, could he be, you know, this underclassman who crashes the party in New York City? And if you look at just the games we won, he maybe wasn't quite that level, but he played at such a high level. But the losses, it showed that it was his first year as a true starting quarterback, and he was only 19. So I'm excited for him to take that next jump. Again, I think he's a guy who can reset all of K-State's passing records. Again, he set the record with 25 passing touchdowns in a season. Now, you know, for Texas Tech or Oregon, some of those programs, that's like 2 weeks, you know, in their offenses, right? K-State doesn't have this history of like big time passers. I think our all time, a single season passing leader, I think Jake Waters is like 3,400 yards. So again, not anything crazy, but I think Avery can set those records. I think he can basically put his name in pen at the top of almost every single quarterback record. I think he can take his rushing to the next level. He was so hesitant to take off and scramble. I think we could see, and that's his most dangerous weapon. I think he could be around an 800, 900 yard rusher, around a 3,000 yard passer. you know, phenomenal. Somewhere around 26.
Those are phenomenal numbers.
Yeah. I think he could have a massive season. And I think if he has that massive season, I think the defense is always, you know, depending on what advanced analytics you want to look at, since Chris Conley came around, somewhere around the top 30 in defense. So I think that it could set K-State up for a very special season. What kind of has me worried is you do have a little bit of inexperience on the outside when you look at the corners. If you look at projected starting corners, you have two sophomores who haven't started a game outside of the Rate Bowl in Arizona last year versus Rutgers. Had some big moments, but also sure, got sure. burnt a couple times.
Sure.
So that has me a little worried. And then losing the left tackle to a what they're calling is a medical situation. He ended up hospitalized after a workout. He is out of the hospital. He's back with the team. But you're going to be starting John Pastore at left tackle, who missed last year with a back injury. He can be a guy. I think he was going to be one of the starting tackles last year before his injury. But George Fitzpatrick from Ohio State, so much buzz around him that he was going to be the real deal possible, maybe second round, first round NFL draft pick in the future. So you don't have that. So I'm a little worried about that, a little bit worried about the secondary, but really I'm bullish and very excited for this season to kick off.
Yeah. As I was reading about K-State kind of prepping for this interview, it doesn't, you know, nobody has weaknesses that they've pointed out for your team, which I, you know, what do you do with that? That it's a little crazy. Let me ask you this. Every team in college football, it seems like, has a huge transfer portal presence. How many transfers did you bring in, and are we concerned about this? I mean, are you excited about this, or how do the non-West Point football fans feel about the transfer portal?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a whole new world for the rest of us. K-State, they do a good job, I think, really of filling in some of those holes. I think at its core, Chris Kleiman still wants us to be a developmental program. When you look across the roster on the two deep, I think you're going to have two or three guys on the offensive line. I think you're going to have some depth in the secondary, but most of them are guys that have come through the program as high school or JUCO recruits and built their way up. The entire defensive line, I think the entire two deep is either a JUCO or high school guy, maybe one transfer. Travis Bates might be on the two deep. But at the linebackers, you have two guys who got thrust into the game early on in their true freshman and redshirt freshman season, and they just really made the most of it. So I don't think it's quite to the level you see at Texas Tech. I don't think it's quite to the level you see at LSU, right? They had a big transfer class, even down the road at the University of Kansas. I think you see K-State filling it in because they're able to develop elsewhere. Now, the one spot that isn't the case is wide receiver. That's been the one, you know, black mark on Chris Kleiman's recruiting, and he's failed at finding that dynamic transfer wide receiver. He's only really developed one in-house, Jace Brown, who had the best sophomore season for a K-State wide receiver in program history last year. He is back, but they basically – They wouldn't say cut, right? You don't cut guys, but they encouraged the entire wide receiver room basically to leave outside of Jace Brown and a couple of fillers at the bottom. And then they brought in three transfer guys. They brought in a JUCO guy, and it really will be Jace Brown and some of these new incoming transfers trying to get things going on the outside.
Interesting. That's very interesting. So we're recording this separately from the College Football Roundtable show, but the topic of today's show is sleeper teams. So now I want to pull back from K-State a little bit and talk about the Big 12 generally. Kansas State notwithstanding, who is your sleeper team to win the Big 12?
So way back when I predicted, I went through an episode and I predicted all 12 games for all 16 teams in the Big 12. And I landed on Utah going 10-2. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, like here I am. Utah didn't even go to a bowl game last year.
Yeah,
I'm going to look so smart. They're amongst the betting favorites. Depending on which book you look at, if you're in a state that's legal, they are co-favorites with K-State, Arizona State. You know,
So
it's not even a sleeper anymore.
Nobody is talking about Utah, though. I mean, at least, you know, where I live in Connecticut, people are not they're not singing the praises of Utah.
So I'm hearing it all around in Big 12. And I think part of it is like, okay, folks want to be like, because last year, the Big 12, right? It was
sure.
It was Iowa State and Arizona State. Arizona State was picked 16th. I think Iowa State was like 11th. I think everyone is looking for that team, and Utah makes sense, right? Because they lost five games by one score.
Right.
The offense was horrible, and then they brought in a brand new OC quarterback combo, and they run a fun brand of football. Now, Dan Pierre had like a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. So I could argue against my pick for Utah, but it now has become the in vogue thing to say is like, hey, Utah. So if I had to go outside of that, I would say maybe TCU. They have such a tough schedule, but they're a little bit further down the list. If you want to look at betting odds, if you want to look at, you know, whatever your book of choice or even stuff that folks are talking about. I hear Utah a ton. I hear Baylor. I hear K-State. I hear Iowa State. I hear a lot of Texas Tech and, of course, Arizona State. So if you have to go outside of those, I think TCU is your best bet because they're going to have an explosive offense. I like Hoover even more than some of those guys that are getting a little bit more love than them. It's going to come down to can they get the running attack going and what can they do on defense and can they survive what looks to be a gauntlet of a schedule. Now, once the football's kicked off, what the schedule looks like on paper goes completely out the window.
Yeah, for sure.
But it looks tough. So if they can get things rolling, I think they could be a team to find themselves in Arlington that first Saturday in December.
So right now, ESPN has you guys ranked 17th. I think that this is the initial AP ranks. I think that that's what I'm looking at, that those dropped today. They have you ranked 17th. Iowa State ranked 22nd. Texas Tech nominally ranked 23rd. So that's two ranked opponents at this point. Is that normal? Like, are you catching a break? It's not that I don't watch the Big 12, but I definitely don't track it close enough to know like how many teams are typically in the top 25 in a given year.
Yeah, in any given year, it kind of depends. Again, we're quote unquote lucky. Jed Fish left Arizona, and that's on our schedule as a quote unquote non-conference game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's weird. We played them as a non-conference game last year as well because it was scheduled so far in advance.
And
it was too late to do that, to switch stuff up. But when you look at it, yes, Iowa State's 22, Texas Tech's 23, but I believe, and I'm going to try to pull it up. I might not be able to, but I believe that Baylor, TCU, and maybe even Utah are all amongst those getting votes that are like inside the top 30 if you want to expand it out from
there.
For
sure, yeah.
And yeah, I think that is normal in the Big 12 that you're going to, especially in this post-Oklahoma and Texas world, you're going to have a lot of teams that are grouped together in that, you know, 15 to 30 range. You know, we don't have Arizona State on the schedule. They're sitting at 11. But yeah, like I said, Utah unofficially at 26, Baylor unofficially at 27. So you have two more of those teams that are real close there. And Colorado and TCU are both receiving a handful of votes, as is Army. It's about typical. You're going to have four to five teams that are in that 15 to 30 range amongst those preseason polls. But again, by the time K-State's playing Texas Tech, if all those transfers work out,
and
K-State has a start to the season, I think they might. That could be a top 15 game. Baylor has the opportunity. Again, they're outside the top 25, both in the AP and coaches poll. But if you look at their early season schedule, they have an opportunity to really make a name for themselves because they're opening it up with Auburn. I'm not a big Auburn believer this year, but then they have SMU, who's in the top 15 in a rivalry game. And then they're playing Arizona State as well with Samford and Oklahoma State in there. So what if Baylor, you know, only has one or they're undefeated coming into that game? That they could be in the top 20 by the time K-State plays them. So I think there's a lot of teams that have the ability to rise into that top 15. But when I look at it, you have a handful of games, four or five games of that 15 to 30 preseason range. That's about normal for K-State's schedule.
Awesome. Yeah. If you're Baylor, drawing early season Auburn this particular year is probably about as good as you can ask for, right? Because,
I think from a Big 12 perspective, that is the number one game that you have to win. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not I'm not wearing, although I have like a couple Big 12 t-shirts and crew neck sweatshirts, I'm not someone who is chanting Big 12, Big 12. That's not my style. But if you're Brett Yormark at the conference offices, that's the one you have circled. If they beat Auburn, if they could then turn around and beat SMU, all of a sudden, again, Baylor's in the top 20, and you got to be feeling good about the Big 12 knocking off some of those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so the reason that I asked you to come on this week is because you got a big week zero matchup. It's the matchup of the weekend. You're flying out to Ireland. I know you told me that you are personally going out there, which I find amazing on a couple of levels. Dude, talk to me about this matchup. Like, let's do the thing.
Yeah, so I think three of the last four matchups have been one-score games. There's been some absolute classics. There was in 2022 when K-State went on to win the Big 12. I think the final score was 10-9, where K-State had a like 75-yard pass play that got stripped at the 1-yard line, and Iowa State recovered. And we had missed field goals, and it was a defensive just absolute slugfest, right? And then you turn around in 2023. There's a game in a blizzard, and like both teams like couldn't stop scoring. Iowa State wins that one. Then last year, very first play of the game, K-State on just a speed option just pitches the ball, recovered by Iowa State, and then had multiple turnovers on our side of the field. Iowa State's starting field position was like 23 yards better than K-State's. So it's a rivalry. It's the longest never interrupted series in college football. They started playing back in 1912, I should have pulled it up, but whenever they started playing, it has never been interrupted, right? They've played every single season since. And then in 2027, it's not on the schedule because the Big 12 redid their scheduling matrix. So it would be the first time since they started playing that it wouldn't be played. But it's
nuts.
It is nuts.
You can't do that. Like, that's a sin.
I'm so mad. I've talked to Gene Taylor, who, has a lot of connections to the Naval Academy. He's our AD. So if you guys want, a little bit of extra buzz to go after K-State, he worked for the University of Navy Athletics Department.
University of Navy. Yep.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's fine. We could, the boat school.
I'm a civilian. Yeah. The boat school. He was in their athletic department. And so if you guys want to give him crap for that, I've been talking to him. I said, you need to go back to the Big 2. It has to happen. It sounds like there's a little hope it could get put back on the schedule. But it has one of the greatest rivalry names, Farmageddon, unrecognized by either athletic department. So that's a fan thing that started on just a fan message board called goema.com back in 2009. Because the game was being played in Arrowhead Stadium for 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So it just came up with that, and then both fan bases took off running with it. It was a series that K-State would win every year in just comedic fashion. And then Iowa State finally got there in Bill Snyder's final year, and they've had the upper hand. And I think it'll be a fun game. I think K-State should win that one, but it truly is the best secondary rivalry, in the Big 12. I think Iowa's main rival, Iowa State's main rival, still Iowa. Sure. I think our main rival still KU, but I think the fan bases, the football staffs, the football teams, and then I know for a fact Jamie Pollard, Iowa State's AD, and Gene Taylor, K-State's AD, they don't get along. Jerome Tang TJ Otzelberger, their basketball coach, they don't get along. The women's basketball teams have had some absolute just ESPN instant classic games. They don't get along. So it really is a rivalry that started amongst the fans on the internet that has really infiltrated every single aspect. So I'm looking
forward beautiful.
To it.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
It's what college sports was meant to be.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. Army has slowly been developing that with UTSA, Texas San Antonio. There's nothing really to the rivalry except that we've just played five or six times in the last few years, and every game is like this insane one-score game. And now that it's a conference opponent, the conference has stumbled to it and started putting it on rivalry weekend. So, which brings me to my question. Y'all played them on rivalry weekend last year. Now you're playing them week zero. It's like back-to-back games against Iowa State at a certain level. I guess that film study just carries over, right?
I think so. Again, Iowa State loses 2,000-yard wide receivers to the NFL. We lose DJ Giddens, who set our university record for most yards per carry in a season. So both teams are losing quite a bit, but I think you do get that. And again, these are teams that know each other well. I think K-State modeled their 3-3-5 defense when they switched to that back in 2021. They modeled it after what Iowa State had been doing. I think hopefully Iowa State's not listening to this. I'm pretty sure we're going to see a little bit more 4-2-5, kind of switching up the personnel a little bit this year for K-State. So it won't be like looking in a mirror. But the teams know each other really well. And again, this is a game that's been played like every single year since the 1910s. So they know each other. And maybe that causes both teams to have a big wrinkle in week zero. And that could cause some absolute havoc over there in Aviva Stadium.
So this we have two shows, right? There's the Army football show, which is for, I don't want to say Army grads, but that's really about the Army football team, right? And then this show, which is sort of about the wider world of college football, sort of targeted at, you know, people who like the military academies, but they just like college football, you know? And for those folks, you know, we know Kansas State, right, is a good team. We know that they are going to contend for the Big 12. What is something to watch for in week zero and in the season? Like if I'm sitting here watching this and I just want to know one thing to look for, like what am I looking at?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, can Avery Johnson take that next step in the passing game, right? I know I talked up, you know,
sure,
what he can do with his legs, but if he can go from, you know, where he was around 55% completion rate, not great for a college quarterback, but the drop rate, I believe it was 11.7% for K-State pass catchers.
Yep,
the drop rate was 11.7%. So if that can even come back a little bit, I think his efficiency can go through the roof. And I think if you see K-State in week zero, if they can have Avery Johnson complete 63% or higher, be at 225 or higher yardage, and see Jace Brown have a big game, 80 yards or more. And again, some college football fans are probably thinking that that's pedestrian. But for K-State, you know, that could be the sign that this could be a special year for K-State. So if that passing game looks good early on, I think it's time to buy stock in K-State.
Okay.
If it struggles, but they can still find a way out of there with a win, I would really be dialed in on the defense. Can the defense pitch, maybe not a shutout, but can the defense be dominant? And if they lose, never talk to me again. I'm ending my show. You know, I was planning on having you back on before the Army game. I might not come back. I might just give up football altogether, because if I'm flying all the way over to Dublin to see us lose to Iowa State for the fifth time in 4 years, I'm going to be depressed. So let's hope that doesn't happen.
So yeah, talk me through the travel plans, because that's not small. Kansas is like not around the corner from Ireland.
Nope. Famously, right in the middle of the country. So I'll be flying out on Tuesday from Kansas City, I think, to Detroit, and then Detroit across the pond. And then it's my dad.
That's a long flight too.
Yeah. It definitely is. I mean, it's definitely not nothing. We're going to land and then we're going to hit the ground running. There's a couple of museums that, you know, I definitely want to see, you know, Dublin Castle. You know, I think one of the oldest cathedrals in Europe is over in Ireland as well. I think we're going to that St. Patrick's Cathedral. We'll do the Guinness Storehouse tour. I have a tour in a distillery that's in an old Catholic church well. My dad and I went to the K-State West Virginia game in, would that have been 2017? We stayed in Pittsburgh, and there was an old brewery that was in an old Catholic church, and that kind of became our thing. When we traveled together, we tried to be like, all right, hey, is there a brewery or something that's in an old converted church? like I said, there's a distillery and a pub as well, so we're going to be going to both of those. And the Alumni Association has a bunch of events over there as well, and we'll be over there, like I said, landing on Wednesday, but then flying right back at 5 in the morning on Sunday. So that's going to come even quicker strike or if it's a loss. So let's hope it's a win. I get to, you know, party all evening and then, you know, have a much more fun trip to the Dublin airport that early. So it's going to be a blast, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a once in a lifetime experience. And I'm glad you get a chance to take advantage of it because it is very cool to fly over to Ireland and watch your team play. All right. I got two questions left and then I will let you get out of here. So first question is, outside of K-State, what else has you excited for this college football season?
I think if I want to go locally, the Big 12, I truly believe the Big 12 is going to be the most fun conference to watch. If you look at power rankings, if you look at win totals, overs and unders, if you look at just public opinion polling, the difference between number one and number 16 in the Big 12 in the grand scheme of things is microscopic compared to other conferences. Again, if Oklahoma State, that they're one of the teams at the very bottom, they have a Hall of Fame head coach. Like, you're telling me Mike Gundy can't find a way to beat anyone on the Big 12 schedule? UCF and West Virginia, some other teams at the bottom of the conference, well, they're welcoming back some of their most beloved coaches of all time and Scott Frost and, crazy guy at West Virginia. Everyone hates him until he starts winning. It was just at Jacksonville State. I'm horrible. Should have had that locked and loaded, but he's coming back. He's coming back again. I think one of the last games he coached was West Virginia losing versus Pitt, losing out on a shot to go to the national championship. And then he goes off to Rich Rodriguez. There we go.
Yeah. Right.
And then he goes off to Michigan. So both of those teams at the bottom are welcoming some of their most beloved coaches back. Noah Fifita is still at Arizona. Again, I think they're going to be horrible. I think Brett Brennan's losing his job, but Noah Fifita is a guy who had one of the greatest underclassmen, seasons just a couple years ago. Willie Fritz is the real deal at Houston. KU, they're opening up, a 69% brand new stadium with Jalen Daniels coming back with his entire legacy on the line. Iowa State coming off of their first ever double-digit win season in program history. Arizona State, everyone's looking at them. Quarterback and wide receiver back. Texas Tech spending $50 million on a roster. I think I've hit every team in the conference. Baylor bringing back Sawyer Robertson. Very navigable schedule. TCU, one of the most electric offenses in the country. Again, the Big 12 is going to be so fun. The Big 12 is going to be exciting. That's what's getting me going locally. And then nationally, I do think that the blue chip ratio, and there's only a handful of teams that can win a national title. I still subscribe to that, right? I don't watch college football for the national title. I don't watch it for the playoff.
That's a stupid way to watch college football, honestly. 136 teams. There's a lot going on.
Exactly. And but my point is, I think we're at a spot in the sport where any given Sunday truly means any given Sunday now. I think you could turn on the TV and watch it here in God's time zone in the central time zone from 11 a.m. until whenever Hawaii's playing. And I think you're going to find entertaining matchups across the entire, globe. Not the globe, but across the country. And I think you're going to see upset bids in every single conference. I think when you look at, say, the American with Army's addition there, I think that is also one of the most exciting conferences when you look at the different brands of football, the different styles of football, some of the up-and-coming coaches in the sport in that conference. I think that's so exciting. The Mountain West, can Boise State run through the entire conference for a second time in their final year before so many of these teams migrate to the, rebirth pack, whatever. So much entertaining. Nothing in the ACC really does it for me. I'm not trying to be a hater. There's nothing in the ACC that really excites me. But again, there's stuff in the Big Ten, like, can Indiana run it back? I don't think so, but I didn't see it coming last year. Nebraska, can they finally kind of resemble Nebraska of old? I hope not. I hate them. And then, in the SEC again, as much as I hate how much of the lexicon is all about the SEC, you see some great atmospheres, you see some great players, you see some great programs, and you're going to see some great games. So I'm just a junkie. I'll watch Mac, on a Tuesday and I'll watch Hawaii at 2 a.m. on a Sunday.
For sure. Well, God bless you. That is the way to do it. All right. So tell us, tell our friends here where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, at Bosco's Boys on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. That's really the only social media I'm on. You can find the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Not on YouTube. I'm not as handsome as you are, so I don't put my stuff on YouTube. But it's on all the other podcast app. Again, we started in June this year. 5 episodes a week all the way through the end of the year. We'll roll right into men's and women's basketball season after that. Not 5 episodes a week, 2 or 3 a week. And we've had at least one episode every single week for over 8 years now. So just very dedicated to the podcast game, talking about college sports. And if you guys want to interact, feel free to. My personal account is at Scott Wildcat. So if you want to talk a little smack before week 2, feel free. If you need recommendations on Manhattan, feel free to reach out on that as well. But I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, we're definitely going to come back to this before that week 2 game. But, we're going to kick that one down the road. I got to see my team play before I'm ready to say that upset's coming, if I'm being honest. So, anyway, Scott, thank you so much for coming on. I will probably talk to you in the next few weeks.
I really appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, man. Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Join the AFF team next week for more hot takes and college football analysis. If you like the show and you want to support us, consider signing up for our Patreon at Ask for Football or opting into our mailing list at askforfootball.com/subscribe. We'll catch you guys next week. And as always, beat Navy.